forget to leave us a 5-star review.
Connect with your favorite community radio station on social media.
Our Facebook page is facebook.com/kboomradio.
And follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/kboo.
We also have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/kboo radio.
We also provide content to the free music archive.
An interactive library of high-quality legal audio downloads.
That's at freemusicarchive.org/curator/kboo.
You can find all of this and more on the KBOO website, kboo.fm.
Thanks for listening.
Like the KBOO Community Radio Facebook page. Find KBOO Community Radio on Facebook and like our page, and have events, ticket giveaways, and great information delivered directly to your personal feed. 1 out of every 7 humans is on Facebook, so using Facebook to share KBOO with your friends and family has never been easier. Like KBOO on Facebook today.
Andy Warhol looks a scream, had him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is artist Judy Cook. Her show, Form First, is on now at the Elizabeth Leach Gallery through June 26th. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus, Judy. It's great to be here in person in your studio, which is in the backyard of your house, 23rd Quimby. So you've been in Northwest Portland since the late 60s, right?
Yes. I moved here in 1968 with my husband, Robert Hansen. And he was teaching at that time. We moved because of got a job at PNCA, Pacific Northwest College of Art. The Form First came from the idea of the supports for this, these wooden boxes, for example, which I've altered and changed into various kinds of shapes. Really was a very formal idea of trying to alter some of the forms that I had in the studio, which are very plain and very simple, had supports added to the tops or to levitate them, give them some kind of a change from just an ordinary shape. But the size and the scale of the pieces is very important to me. So there's quite a variation of size. Some of the paintings in there, like Pink and Present Danger, are both angular pieces. I have another artist that I work with, Chris Gander, who's a sculptor, who built all of the supports. Anything that's involving wood was built by him to my specifications.
As you go into the Liz Leach Gallery, you go to the rear area near the office, and that's where these pieces are. There is one called Present Danger. I think it may have been a square, but you shaped it so that it's some kind of, what is that shape called? It's almost a square.
All of my pieces have no measurement that's defined.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an angular piece. I lay them out by cutting out cardboard for a specific form, and then I decide how thick it will be, and then Chris Gander is able to build that. But I never know what the image will be on the front of the piece until it arrives back in my studio.
Mm-hmm.
So they're basically birch ply, and most of them are anywhere from about 2 inches to 1 inch from the wall. They have a relationship to the wall. It's very important to me.
The colors you used in Present Danger, it's mostly a kind of a light turquoise with a yellow to one side and a kind of beige white. In all your pieces, I think, you're using these bold black lines, mostly at right angles, varying thickness of paint. To generalize, I would say none of the lines go where you kind of expect them to go. Everything is crossing, taking diversions, creating funny angles. There are very few curves as well in all the work. These two kind of go together. Present Danger, the yellow and the blue, and then there's another one called Pink. And pink is mostly pink, and then a bit of beige, and then the same kind of black lines with a few curves. So you say the image that you're going to put on the... It's like basically a wooden box.
They're very lightweight. They're hollow, basically, inside, in terms of the craft of that. With both of those pieces, what I'm interested in, those are only 2 inches in thickness, but they're very light. I'm really exploring edges in both of those and almost all of the wood pieces that are in the show. I'll pull line around the edge. It's kind of an idea of thinking the form. Painting in general, it's always thought of as the presentation of what you're seeing in the front. What are you seeing on the face of a painting? Generally, there's no attention paid to the side of a painting at all. And so when I started making these forms that were all irregular and angled, I realized that I could begin to treat the edges of those forms, you know, with a different kind of mark or pull a line around it, almost as though the painting is a kind of package and you're kind of surprised when you come up to the edge of the painting to see a different kind of treatment. The difference between Present Danger and Pink is actually a lot of decisions being made about the type or the kind of painting that I'm doing. Because one of them, Present Danger, is much more formal and more linear in its treatment. I had a lot of thoughts about Mondrian in that particular piece. And Pink is much more exploratory and much looser on the front of it because there's a lot of overpainting and it's a very different treatment, much more of a brush treatment.
Mm-hmm.
But the edges on Pink are very formalized, just a stripe. And I wanted something that was abruptly different from the face of the painting to the side.
So you're always thinking of, you know, how the light might reflect onto the gallery wall and what's visible on the side, the edge of a painting. Why do you care about these marginal parts?
Well, the paintings exist kind of in a territory that's in between sculpture and in between painting. You know, my response to artistic work, you know, for myself personally, has always been about what the material is. So, for example, when I was working with rubber, I started out with putting the rubber on a form and then just, you know, gluing it down, and then actually moved into doing some pieces that were slumped and used nails and were much more about a loose form put against a gallery wall, against your own wall, studio wall. Just very different thinking. And the sculptural element in the work, for example, with particularly 2 out of the 3 wooden pieces that are not painted on, they're mostly, it's a waxed birch panel that you're looking at, and then, you know, then there's drawing on it, mostly in black and fairly thin line, I would say, overall. But those boxes, 2 of the pieces in particular, I felt really needed something that altered what was basically a very generic shape that wasn't changed. So there's a playoff with some things that seem to be pretty ordinary, just as a strip or a piece, and then other ones are really thought about as something that's angular, and you have to deal with the visual stuff completely differently.
The ones that just look like plain wood with black marks on,
right.
Landing and also sled, they have a strip of wood sort of attached to the top, and then there's a little piece sticking out that makes it bend.
Right.
Are those the pieces you were just talking about?
Yes, that's the architectural kind of element with that. And in both of those pieces, landing and also in sled, the whole top kind of apparatus, which is just very thin and just fir wood, is not glued down to the piece. It's removable. So that when I was working on them in the studio, I would shift them from left to right and make a lot of decisions about where they would be at the final ending. In Sled, in particular, the piece is much longer, probably 5 or 6 feet of the top piece, and Sled itself is about 7.5 feet long. To make a very extended line in something like that, to deal with that kind of narrowness, I just felt it needed a lot of more interest, maybe on the top. And the fur piece, that the thin slat that exists on the top, came deliberately from a lumber yard where, instead of looking for straight fur, I was looking for something that was warped. So I have a number of those pieces still floating around my studio that I pull out from time to time and then lay them on another form to see kind of how they react. It's a very different treatment than, for example, the blue piece, Ice, which is only 3 inches high and 2 inches thick, but it's 5 feet in length. You know, I worked on the piece for actually a couple of years, put it away and overpainted it and stripped it down and one thing and another. But I was just very interested in trying to make a painting in a 3-inch strip. The piece itself, Ice Blue, the idea for the content of the piece came from a photograph in the New York Times that was in Alaska. And it was a 1-point perspective photo that I kept in my studio for quite a while, just newsprint. The direction of this photograph were that there were a whole series of houses going off in 1-point perspective that you were looking at, but what you were aware of and what the New York Times was telling you was that it was a piece of land that jutted out and that the ice and the glacier movement and water sooner or later was going to force that community to leave. So there was a sort of environmental pickup from that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the ice piece, it looks like, in a very abstract way, a blue sky with a curved white ground, yeah, you know, horizon. And then there are these gray boxes and lines on top of that, which, what are they made of?
The majority of that piece is blue, but there's a lot of collage in there, and the collage is recycled lithographic plates. Some of those came from Legacy Health. They're aluminum plates that were lithographic for printing out medical material. There were some other ones that came from Reed College that concerned kind of academic things that had been written up and needed to be printed, maybe for a catalog. So I cut those out. There's some contact glues that are extremely strong, and I can put them down, glue, and then paint over that. Or maybe they've been painted previously and I cut it out, so it's a kind of metal fabrication.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Judy Cook. Her show, Form First, is on now at the Elizabeth Leach Gallery on Northwest 9th Avenue, and it runs through June 26th. You found these sheets of aluminum. You took some of them whole and used them as your canvas, mm-hmm, and they're hanging on the wall from little nails. Yeah. Those three are called House of Pink, Tilt, and Zoot. Is that Zoot, like Zoot Suit?
Zoot, yes.
Why is that one called Zoot?
There's a Roy DeCarva photograph that he took in Harlem in a nightclub very long time ago, and it's a very well-known photograph. I did my collage without thinking about that photograph. A suit at the time that would have very large shoulders, very sharp, very defined, very fashionable of the moment. And the rest of the photograph is very dark. He's a very well-known black artist, and the use of the absence of light and then how he brings light into a photograph is extremely interesting. But it was one of those occurrences where you do a piece of work and then later have a very abrupt kind of image of another person's work.
Mm-hmm.
But I think with work, there's often, you know, your own kind of private dialogue with maybe stories you tell yourself, things you think about, you know, as you're working. That has a really big effect, I think, on what you end up with.
These ones on metal, how are you applying these black lines?
It's black oil paint and various different size brushes. Those particular pieces, I think all three of those are, you know, really freehand in the respect that it's not taped, for example, to get a really straight line. Usually it's just a ruler and a brush that feels like it's going to do the job, you know, very direct. And I often, you know, sometimes I overpaint that line and change it. Drawing was really very primary, I mean, in terms of what I've learned. I mean, way back with early education at Boston Museum School. So there were a lot of years of drawing from the figure. That was primary to education then. My real foundation was in drawing. And then if you're working in printmaking, I think the other big information that I took away as an artist was, if you're working on etching, you have to determine the size of everything before they sell copper by a certain yard width, a size and weight. And it was very, very available, and of course, much, much cheaper than it is now. In the printmaking department at Boston Museum School, we'd all get together and order copper together. And people would say, oh, I want this much, I want that much. And you'd have to determine that before by having some kind of drawing or something very specific that you were going to do, because you were paying for the copper by the inch.
So we're in your studio, which is almost soundproof. There are windows, but I imagine it's double glazed or triple glazed. Mm-hmm. And it's also radio signal proof too.
Yeah, the studio was built, at least 25 years back, which seems sort of impossible for me to look back and realize the studio has been here this long. It's 40 feet long and 30 feet high, and probably, I'm not sure about the, yeah, it is really quiet. It's a green building. The wall, there isn't any, you know, work up at the present except for all of the studio collage fragments of things that I use.
So you use the walls as a kind of a sketch pad, right? You pin things up.
Yeah.
They're 3D things, you know.
Right.
These are like gloves you found in the street and
right.
sketches, prints,
right.
cutouts, abstract shapes. You know, they look kind of organized, but tell me, are these all working towards one piece?
No. Some of the pieces are very old. I mean, they would go back to maybe 1989 or so. They've been collected from a lot of different sources. At some point, I was working with cardboard and doing collage pieces in cardboard where it's oil painted, glued, collaged, maybe not bigger than, 4 inches or so. So the sizes will vary, but some of the things that I constructed, which are very small, end up sometimes being very big. And it's kind of a determinant later about how big will this piece be or how small will this piece be. The idea of scale, which is not the same thing as measuring something.
But these things on the wall, are they kind of notes towards other works, or are these the actual finished works?
Well, that's interesting. To me, sometimes they are very determined as separate pieces of work. You know, I generally have a great deal of them. They haven't been exhibited, you know, on their own. They're kind of my own private archival stuff. And I have detailed drawings of some things that were actually constructed way, way back, of trying to decide how big and how small things would be and how it could be made.
Mm-hmm. These are sketchbook pages with plans, you know, with the inch count next to things and letters and a lot of old newspaper clippings, right, and photos.
It's one from the Oregonian.
Oh, yeah. Actually, it's up there. A man crossing the bridge with an umbrella. Right. And the photo was taken by Mary Tapogna. And then a lot of Polaroids.
Yes. There are a lot of Polaroids that my husband made, and over a period of time, and there, I have a huge collection of his of Polaroids that actually came, mostly, a lot of them came from the industrial area, because where I'm living used to be much more industrial than it was.
Mm-hmm. I remember the trains rolling around
cut
here.
Off, yeah, the cutoff of Northwest 23rd down, you know, which is now the Pearl, but that really didn't look like a Pearl at all.
So what was your husband's name, and what was he doing taking pictures in the industrial area?
Robert Hansen's an artist who since passed on, and his work is at Elizabeth Leach and also in the Portland Art Museum collections and many others. And he taught at PNCA for really from 68 on until he retired. And he was teaching drawing, and Bob had his own practice. So we shared studios for really a long part of our marriage.
So he was taking pictures of these big round metal things. Are they kind of drums or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who knows what they are, dumpsters?
Yeah, he was, I think, as interested in photography. I mean, he's really known more for his drawings, I think, and paintings. But the photography was very much part of his way of working. And when we moved here in 68, there was a Polaroid camera around, which he had. He would go off for a walk and then come back with, you know, a great number of just things that he took. Terrific help for me, because I wasn't doing anything with photography, and he would go off and photo these and then sometimes leave these Polaroids, you know, on my sketchbook. When he came back, he'd mm-hmm. see something that, you know, that I was interested in.
He took several of circles, and one of them actually says under it, someone's written, probably him, another circle for Judy.
Yeah.
So are these up for sentimental reasons, or do you still find artistic inspiration?
Those were given to me, and they're really important. And, you know, there was a reverb from that, because if you're looking at the studio wall, I have four of his Polaroids up, and then next to that is a small cardboard circle with a dot in it that I thought was kind of interesting. And then there are a couple of other things that just turned up that were circular.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a kind of artistic conversation kind of going back and forth.
And then you have these two walls that are just bare except for pencil lines and lots of holes,
right,
and the occasional nails. What's going on here?
Well, the studio, of course, is now emptied out because all of the previous work that's up at Elizabeth Leach right now were up on this wall. So, you know, the long piece sled, you know, took up an entire wall mm-hmm. for a couple of years, actually. I left it up and, you know, so that's a 2021 piece. It was a 2-year piece, and it's kind of awkward, you know, installing a really large piece. So I, you know, it stayed, but the other things were smaller, so I could move them around, you know, easily on the wall.
Mm-hmm. So it's like you just harvested, and now this is the
right, exactly,
the fallow, the empty field.
Yeah. So now it's a kind of it's like back to square one.
What's happening next then? What would you see if you came back in a month? What would be up there?
Well, there'd probably be some cardboard marquettes, but I have a number of wooden forms that Chris Gander had built for me before, and only one of those spring, actually, in terms of larger forms, was more recent. I'd had the form for several years, actually, and there are some other forms that size, so 4 or 5 feet. You know, I had four that I thought were all going to go together, and that never happened. Some of those forms separated, and now they're waiting to be painted, mm-hmm. you know, or treated, however I do.
And you said the image just comes to you when you see the
The images are coming from, they're concrete. I mean, they're abstract images that happen, and it's a process of finding the image. The method is really involves both drawing and then figuring out a palette, whether they're going to be just, it's going to be more in a drawing realm, so it would only be black on wood or black even on white, which I've done before. But if it's really specific, if I'm beginning to think about color, I have a pile of colored papers from the New York Times, and I've had these for a very long time.
You still get the print edition?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I get the Times. I'm kind of an addict. I get the New York Times 7 days a week, and there was a period more in, I would say, 2020, where the New York Times was printing very large pieces. You know, a whole page would be devoted to a color,
mm-hmm.
and it would have ads on it, but there would be large areas that you could cut out and collage.
Oh, so you're just using it as a source of colored paper.
You bet. Yeah, you can see it over there. I can look at these things and begin to realize what kind of color relationship. It's very concrete. Painting for me is not, you have to think about it.
Why would you not just go down to Blick and buy a packet of colored construction paper?
What really attracted me to what I was seeing in the newsprint is all of that has a value range. It's not shiny. It's a matte surface because it's a printed material, but all destined for the same place. There isn't a lot of contrast of material. You're just looking at the color, and it'll have a matte, kind of really beautiful quality to it. It wouldn't work as permanent collage in a lot of ways because newsprint now fades. It fades even more rapidly now than it used to. I mean, the whole pulp paper situation, you know, whatever is going in it, you know, is really not the same as 10 years back. And anybody that's kept newsprint around, I have some news photographs in the studio that are 25 years old. And it's different from the more recent things that I take out mm-hmm. of paper. Not as stable, you know, at all.
My name is Joseph Gallivan, and you've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Judy Cook. Her show, Form First, is on now at the Elizabeth Leach Gallery through June 26th. Thanks so much for inviting me into your studio to do Art Focus, Judy.
Oh, I was glad to do it. Thank you.
Andy Warhol looks a scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all. Thank you.
Portland.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy martes 15 de junio del 2000.